Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodger answer joining at some point in the next half hour, we anticipate here on the show. This hour brought to you by Canucks Talk, or this hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. There we go. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC. I'm live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at DunbarLumber.com. And maybe related to that ridiculous screw up on that read, this text comes in. Hey Dodd, fans are coming apart at the seams. The anxiety of the ghosts of playoffs past are seeping into the inbox. Can you pass on, and these are emojis, kisses, flowers, and hugs to all the stressed out fans. Love from Nelson. It's going to be okay, bros. And then he says, by the way, you're really getting hosed during these playoffs. Drancer gets to fly to Nashville, skip out, you're on your own for 3 hours all by your lonesome, then he shows up for 20 minutes from some cowboy bar, no doubt. I appreciate that. I'm doing my best. I'm trying to keep it all together today, Rafe. Do we have Batch on the line? Nope. Yeah, 1 second. All right, we're gonna get Brendan Batchelor on the line here. Well-oiled machine today here at Sportsnet 650, and you can keep getting your thoughts in. 650, 650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. I do think, you know, to the first part of that text, right, that fans are coming apart at the seams, the anxiety and the ghosts of playoffs past are starting to kind of rear their heads. I think there's something to that, right? Because it's been a long time since the Canucks won a playoff series. They've had a lot of outside of the bubble, at least. There's been a lot of really, really frustrating series, really, really frustrating experiences since that win against the San Jose Sharks in 2011 and this moment. So I do think there's almost this kind of surreal aspect to it, right? Of, oh my gosh, are they actually going to do this? Are they actually going to win a playoff series? And that's contributing to a lot of the angst that we're getting in our inbox. All right, joining me right now, he is the voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. He is our guy, Brendan Batchelor. Batch, what's going on, man?
How's it going?
I'm doing well. So what would you wear if you were going to a nightclub in Riga?
That is a very good question. probably something that resembles what Artur Cilov's dress shirt looked like. But I've never, honestly, until this moment, put myself in that hypothetical situation. So I probably have to ask Dom for advice on that, to be perfectly honest.
That's a very good point. I made the reference earlier. I know you're a wrestling guy. The shirt of Shelov's reminded me of something like one of the silk shirts The Rock would wear on Monday Night Raw and like brag about how it cost $3,000.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Especially when The Rock was a heel,
yeah,
trying to, you know, be the bad guy and frustrate the crowd. He wore some very awful looking shirts like that. So 100%, I could see how that would track.
Anyways, I got to respect Artur Cilov for rocking that kind of fashion as a young guy, man. He's not like, don't let the old guys tell you how to dress. Just do your thing out there. But like, what do you think of just in general, you know, JT Miller and then Nikita Zadorov with the quote after practice, obviously a concerted effort by some of the veterans on this team, especially, I think it's interesting, some of the guys who have played a lot of playoff games in their career, like JT Miller, like Nikita Zadorov, really trying to keep the mood light, it seems, ahead of game six in Nashville.
Yeah, it's important, and I think it's, you know, first of all, it's not the first time we've seen that from this group, right? Remember the Connor Garland t-shirts for his 400th game? So, mm-hmm. You know, this is a group that understands the importance of these big moments and the pressure that can be on you and how to kind of alleviate that pressure and get back to, hey, you know, regardless of, you know, what the fan base is saying or regardless of what people outside of the dressing room are thinking, now that we've lost game five, guess what? We're still playing a game for a living. We still get to come to the rink and have fun and, you know, try and refocus on that side of things rather than the pressure and the what if we don't win game six and, you know, what will it feel like if we have to come back for game seven or, you know, what if we give up the first goal? Like, all these things that you very easily could get in your head about. And, you know, from some of the tone on the Dunbar Lumber text line, I think some of the fan base certainly are. Inside the dressing room, they've got to make sure that they keep that out, and you like to see that from a guy like JT Miller in particular.
Now, Drance also mentioned, I know on Twitter, that the Canucks were getting a lot of power play work in at practice today, and, you know, no surprise considering how poor the power play performed in Game 5, and that's something where if they'd come through in a big moment, that could have helped close out that series, and especially considering, you know, not that they'd been super effective all series, but they had the two big goals in Game 3 that won them that game. To see them so flat in Game 5 with the man advantage was really surprising to me. What stood out to you about what went wrong with the power play in Game 5?
Yeah, well, getting set up, I think, first of all, right? Like the entries and, you know, sounds like they were working on the entries quite a lot at practice today. And the thing that I've always thought about zone entries on the power play in particular when they've struggled is that they're too predictable. Like they try the same play always where, you know, or they have tried it a lot where they gain the left wing wall and Miller tries the rink wide pass and teams have that scouted now. So there's usually someone sitting right there to pick that pass off. And then when they were gaining the line on the other side, I thought Brock Besser, who most often had the puck on his stick, needed to be more deliberate and often got caught with the puck and would get outmanned because again, they haven't scouted what they're trying to do. And that was leading to turnovers and clears for the Predators. And, you know, as much as Rick Tocchet talks about the importance of clears on your penalty kill, they're the bane of a power play. And you cannot let the other team get multiple clears or it takes any momentum that you have on your man advantage away and forces you again to regain the zone. And with a Predators team that's done a pretty good job of standing the Canucks up at the line and stripping of pucks, you know, that's crucial. So, you know, hopefully they're working on some different looks on the entries or at least different guys to get the puck to. Or if it is going to be a guy like Besser or Miller that receive the puck on the walls, you know, maybe a hard rim with a guy skating downhill on the far side or get guys with speed forechecking so that even if you have to dump it in on the power play, which generally isn't something you want to do, you can get in there quickly and recover it. And I think that is some of the success that they've had at 6-on-5, particularly at the end of game 4. And yeah, you know, you've got six guys on the ice, so it's a little bit different, but even at 5-on-4, you still have one extra player. So if you chip a puck deep, you should have the guys to go and make that recovery and retrieval. And that might be the best way for them to get set up in the zone. But, you know, short of winning offensive zone faceoffs and keeping the puck in the offensive end and controlling play, if they can't do that, then the success of the power play, to me, all comes down to entries and being able to get into the zone.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, Drancer really did say that they were doing a lot of work on those entries. So I think Rick Tocchet's certainly agreeing with you on that point, Batch. I mean, how much does Elias Pettersson need to be a lot better on the power? Like, we know he needs to be better everywhere, right? But I think sometimes when we're talking about, you know, the struggles of the power play in general, like, how much of that comes down to a guy who should be a really key part of it, a guy who can help when he's at his best with zone entries on the power play, you know, just not being at the top of his game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't even think they need him to be at the top of his game for the power play to have more success. He just needs to not be a hindrance to the power play. So plays can't die on his stick or he can't bobble the puck and turn it over and the other team gets a clear or regains possession. And I think a perfect example of that is the play he made on the game tying goal in game 4, which, yeah, at 6-on-5, it's not a traditional power play, but he gets the puck at the top of the zone. His eyes never leave the shooting lane. So, you know, he tricks a couple of defenders into thinking that he's going to throw the puck to the net. And he just taps the puck over to Miller, who gets the look from the left circle. And obviously Besser scored on the rebound. So that's the example of a play that, look, I think with how much Pettersson struggled here, it would be unreasonable to expect him to all of a sudden become this huge difference maker who's making big plays with the puck on his stick and scoring timely goals, although that would certainly be welcomed if it does happen, but just don't be the reason that the power play fails. Don't be the guy who always has the puck die on his stick. And if you can get, you know, clear that bar, which admittedly is a very low bar for a guy like Elias Pettersson, then at least you're not hurting the power play, even if you're not helping it as much as you could be.
All right, Batch, we're gonna try something tricky here. I'm going to bring my co-host Drancer onto the show mid-interview, and he's gonna tag in and ask you some questions. Drancer, are you there?
I am. How do I sound?
You sound a little hot, but it's all right.
Okay, well, I can
there you go.
Ease off.
There we go.
I can back off. I'll just speak gently to my good friend Brendan Batchelor as I ask him, you know, in regards to the concerns about Pettersson, a lot of power play work at practice today. Rick Tocchet noting after practice that Pettersson had a couple nice goals, a couple nice sequences on their in-zone play, and Pettersson and Tocchet had a lengthy conversation. Just... Batch, when you think about where Pettersson's game is at, you know, the moving the feet conversation, the power play issue conversation, the getting shots through conversation, what stands out to you as your biggest concern about where his game's at?
It's confidence to me. Like, everything else will follow if he can be confident in the decisions he makes and the way that he plays in general. And moving your feet comes with that, so I can understand why they're talking about, hey, he's got to move his feet. That's, you know, everything will follow after that. And that certainly is the case. But to me, when he's playing confidently, that's something that just is part of his game. And he makes deliberate decisions, whether it is choosing to shoot or making a great pass. He doesn't bobble the puck. He doesn't, you know, right now it feels like you can hear and see him thinking about what he's going to do, and you can't overthink things at this level, especially in the postseason where time and space is at a premium, regardless of whether you're on the power play or at even strength. So, you know, I like to hear that from Rick Tocchet, because even though it's practice, he's saying, hey, he had some nice sequences, he had some nice goals. If they're having a long chat after practice, he's probably trying to boost his confidence, and that to me is the key to all of this. If Pettersson can unlock his confidence again, then he can get back to being the kind of player that's a difference maker. And, you know, that's what this seems to me more than anything, assuming there isn't an injury issue that we're unaware of. And that's something we won't really find out one way or the other until this playoff run comes to an end for the Canucks. But assuming full health, assuming not being hampered by any physical problem, then this is all upstairs. And once you can unlock that confidence, he can get back to his game.
Yeah, he was asked by NHL.com if, you know, everyone's banged up at this time of year. Is there any injury limitations? And he dismissively responded with, no, I feel terrible today. With regards to just the lack of line changes at practice today, I sort of asked talking about the fact that both coaches have seemed to like the balance of the series, even though every game's been, you know, decided on a knife's edge. And he noted that he thinks that they've been able to catch Nashville leaning, and that there's some matchups that he thinks, if given enough time, the Canucks will be able to exploit. What are your thoughts on how Vancouver's depth has played over the course of the series?
Yeah, I think relatively well. You know, I'm not a fan of deployment changes at this point. Like, you've come too far in the series. You do have the lead. And, you know, even though there are lots of questions about offensive generation and needing to produce more shots and chances and things like that, you know, you risk messing up some of the depth you have and some of the mismatches you might be able to create by tweaking too much. And look, like, I hear people saying, put the Lotto line back together and why hasn't he done that yet? Well, actually he has. He's done it quite a bit situationally in this series. And even though a guy like Elias Pettersson's line mates on the lineup card and in the warm up and in practice are Hoglander and Mikheyev, Pettersson's playing a heck of a lot more than either of those other two players, Hoglander in particular, who at one point was the low man in terms of average ice time for the entire team in the series. And, you know, I thought Hoglander had a much better game on home ice in game 5. But, you know, this is what the playoffs are about. They're about situational edges. They're about in-game adjustments. And so, for the most part, the lineup combinations that Tocchet has rolled out have worked. And I know there are people that, you know, want to stamp their feet and say Pod Colson should go in there. It's clear that from a two-way perspective, he trusts a guy like DiGiuseppe more in a limited role with not a lot of ice time than he does a young player like Pod Colson right now. And whether that's something you want to hear or not, it's, you know, the fact of the situation, and it's why Pod Colson is back down in Abbotsford now. But generally speaking, the edge they have to be able to roll the three centermen that they have in particular in Miller, Lindholm, and Pettersson, especially if Pettersson can find his game, is something that, you know, is not what the Predators can counter, right? Like, it's a very different level of potential success that you create for yourself by rolling that deep down the middle. So as much as you could move Pettersson to the wing, as much as you can look at Pugh Suter and say he hasn't finished enough of his chances, you know, at least they're getting those chances. And they have to believe that with that line in particular, with how well they've played in whatever matchup role they've been in, whether it was the McCarron line earlier, although I think they certainly could have capitalized more on that mismatch in terms of creating offense, or whether it's been their ability to go head-to-head with the O'Reilly line, I would be very loath to change very much if I was Rick Tocchet too. So I'm not surprised. And, you know, the only thing I can see maybe changing, other than, as I said, situational in-game adjustments, is if things go really pear-shaped in game six and suddenly you're coming back home, you know, winner take all single game seven, then everything goes out the window and you just do whatever you have to win that game. But guess what? We're not there yet. So, you know, I'm not pushing the panic button or pulling any sort of alarm at this point based on the way they played throughout the series.
Batch, appreciate the time as always, man. We look forward to your call on game six tomorrow afternoon.
Sounds good. Thanks, boys.
That is Brendan Batchelor, voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. Drancher, this has been a wild show, man. You were on earlier on the phone. You were at practice. Now you're here for the rest of the show. We're rolling with the punches at playoff time.
Yeah. Well, a credit to you, man. You know, like, sometimes
doing my best
in the playoffs, right? You're not able to be at your best. The schedule intervenes, whatever sort of holds you back. And you have bought me time. You have been the guy who stepped up. You are the JT Miller, or at least the Pugh Suter,
yes,
filling in everywhere to make this show work. So a credit to you, my guy.
That's right.
Thank you so much for enabling me to do, to have a weird day of the sort that I'm having. So, Canucks practice.
Yep.
After we last chatted, we did see the lines. They were exactly the same. Then the club really spent the vast majority of the practice working on the power play, right? Series has been so tight at 5-on-5. Really nothing to separate these two teams. 6 goals for Vancouver, 5 goals for Nashville. Literally tied in shot attempts at 5-on-5 when the score is within a goal through 5 games in the series. So, in some ways, I do think that shines a light on the impact that the power play can make, right? I mean, one power play goal in game six is likely, frankly, to make the difference between advancing and returning to Vancouver for a pressure-packed game seven. And, you know, I honestly was watching it and thought a lot of the in-zone execution was way off. There were a lot of sequences that sort of died on various players' sticks. And one thing I noted was just how encouraging, like I thought unusually encouraging, Rick Tocchet was with his group, right? Like, great play, good skill. Just like a lot of positive reinforcement as the club worked through it. And then post-practice, Tocchet talked about some of the nice plays that Pettersson in particular made to score goals and hoping that that's something to build off. And in addition, of course, to the fact that Pettersson had his best game of the series in game five. We all know the Canucks need him to get going. Chatted with him a bit after practice. You know, he talked about sort of managing the emotions of playing in a playoff with fans in the building for the first time. Suggested that early in the series that got away from him. You know, I do think he feels like game five hopefully represented something of a turning point in his game, both in terms of his forechecking and playmaking. But, you know, was very guarded when asked about his injury, like to the point of sort of just sarcastically commenting on it, as opposed to doing something more along the lines of what you'd expect at this time of year, which is, you know, everyone's banged up, but you can't use it as an excuse. I'm going to do everything I can to help this team win tomorrow. Like, that's kind of the answer that you expect.
Yep.
Not the, no, I feel terrible. You know, I clearly there's something there in terms of his, whether it's his confidence level or just, you know, an immaturity about handling this moment, whether or not he's injured, right? Whether or not he's playing through some pain or some limitations physically at the moment. You know, I think there's going to be a learning experience coming out of this, regardless of how game six turns out, regardless of how game seven turns out, regardless of how the next round turns out. You know, just from a maturity standpoint, in terms of like, what adjustments do you make when you're not 100% in the playoffs? How do you find ways, subtle ways to help your team win? You know, I do think that's sort of where our attention is going to go, unless Pettersson sort of can maintain his game five form and add some bottom line into that equation and make the difference in over the balance of this series and over the balance of Vancouver's playoff run.
All right. We just got a couple more minutes left here. Now, obviously, we're not going to find out an answer to this one way or another until maybe even like warmups tomorrow, right? The question of who's going to start in goal for the Canucks.
I suspect Tocchet will tell us after morning
skate. All right. Fair enough. Did anything at practice?
That'd be my guess. I mean, we'll play Tocchet audio next segment, right? Or the segment after?
1:30, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, you'll hear like the first 3 minutes is a soliloquy about goaltending, the goaltending decision. Tocchet saying that they'll make the decision this afternoon. Talk to Casey DeSmith after the practice a little bit. He's definitely feeling 100%. It's impossible not to feel for this guy, given that, you know, he came in his first ever playoff start, made like 45 saves, and then wasn't able to finish the game because he got injured, right? And then he comes in and has sort of a signature performance in his second career playoff start, is the story of the game, is the Canucks steal game three, smash and grab in Nashville, and then it, you know, is less than 100% and has to miss a couple starts. I think he's eager to get back in, but I also think there's a lot of pride that between him and Seelovs, they've been able to build a bridge for the club, you know, effectively help patch over what really should have been a devastating injury and losing Thatcher Demko again after game one. So, you know, just my gut is that this guy really wants to play, is ready to play, and I'd lean, my expectation narrowly would be that he will play in game six, but we'll learn more tomorrow as the Canucks make their decision this evening, coming off of practice and some of the consultations that will naturally happen after that.
Yeah, it's one of those things, for as much talk as there's been and much, you know, speculation and conversation about it, it's also like, they can win with either guy. And I've made this point a couple of times on the show. They have won already in this series with either guy. So I find it interesting too. I find the, you know, the thought process that goes into it and how you manage these two goalies really interesting. But it's also like, I'd be very, very surprised if win or lose in game six, it's necessarily because of the goalie decision, right? Like, it's not like, even if you go to Casey DeSmith and he plays poorly, that doesn't mean it was a bad decision to go to Casey DeSmith. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's an important decision, but it's also one that is kind of much less important than, you know, Elias Pettersson getting going, the team playing well, the power play, all of those things I think are probably going to have a much bigger impact than the goaltending decision.
I agree with you. I think that's a cogent point. One thing I really liked, Ian McIntyre, and he, you'll hear it on the audio, but he asked Tocchet about whether you feel a sense of loyalty to Smith, and then kind of walked it back. But more than anything, the framing of the question was, is there some sense of loyalty to a goaltender who's helped you get here to get him back in if he's now 100% in time for game six? And I thought Tocchet's answer was an interesting one and a good one, which is that, you know, the loyalty that'll govern his decision is based on the crest, right? Very much echoing some of his previous commentary, but I thought in a pretty insightful way. So we'll definitely be interesting to see what the Canucks do in net in a pretty crucial game on Friday.
It's Canucks Talk here. Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Drance are down in Nashville. Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Merit Kitchens. Canadian-made beauty, strength, and craftsmanship. Find an authorized kitchen designer near you today at meritkitchens.com. Your tailored kitchen awaits. Shayna Goldman from The Athletic is going to join us next. We'll talk Nashville and Vancouver, and we'll talk some of the other playoff series that are still going, some of them that have wrapped up as well. That's coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
You want me to think that you're wild?
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz here with you. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Sky Avenue Kitchen and Lounge. Discover Surrey's newest luxury dining experience. Experience the richness of Canadian cuisine prepared by a Michelin-recommended chef. Reserve your table today at skyavenue.com. Shayna Goldman is going to join us momentarily here on the show, of course, from The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast. And Drantzer, we'll get into, of course, lots about the Canucks and the Preds with Shayna. But, you know, game six, always, of course, going to be a crucial, really high stakes game. The Oilers, as expected, finishing off the Kings in five games last night puts even a little bit more impetus on it for the Canucks, though, right? I mean, we talked about, I think you used the phrase, hey, they're kind of in a race with Edmonton. Well, Edmonton has won that race to finish off their series now. The Canucks, hey, at a certain point, I get it, advance however you can, but you want to make sure you finish as closely behind in second place to the Oilers as you can by finishing this one off in six.
Well, especially because this is bumper car hockey. This is meat grinder hockey in this series, right? It is physical. It is fast. It does not look like a ton of fun, especially if you're a skilled player, to play the Predators right now, right? And by the way, it doesn't look fun for the Predators to play the Canucks either, right? Between Zadorov and Joshua and McDonough and what we're seeing from McCarron and that Predators fourth line getting in on Canucks D, like, there's no way there's not a very, very high bumps and bruises per 60 in both ways in this series. Both teams are blocking shots. I mean, there is an attrition that occurs as the playoffs go on, an attrition that has already, you know, in some ways shaped Vancouver's lineup, and especially in net. And to Vancouver's credit, they've been able to hold the fort. But you obviously want to limit, like, three more periods against the Predators is suboptimal.
Yeah.
Given that this team was 13 minutes away from advancing in game five. Six more periods, even beyond the chance you take in a series where every game has fundamentally come down to a flip of a coin. You know, even beyond that, six more periods, that's tough. Like, that's going to put you behind the eight ball, especially given the likelihood that you'd start your next round against the Oilers if you had to play, you know, on Sunday in a game seven,
Tuesday,
a game that would surely take a ton of emotional toll on this team, you know, 2 days later, 3 days later, like, probably a pretty quick turnaround if this series goes the distance.
Yeah, and I think that point about the emotional toll of a game seven and then a really quick turnaround to the next series is a really good one as well. There's lots and lots of incentive for the Canucks to try to wrap this one up in six. Now joining us, as mentioned, she covers the NHL for The Athletic. You can also hear her on the Too Many Men podcast. She is Shayna Goldman. Shayna, thank you as always for making some time for us today. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. So we're getting excited for game six between the Canucks and the Preds tomorrow. And man, this series has been so close. It's been physical. I don't know if it's necessarily been the most entertaining playoff hockey, but if you like that intensity and that physicality, it certainly had it. What stood out to you so far through five games about this series?
I feel like I'm one of the only people who actually likes this series. and I mean, maybe it's because even if you're not like super hyped about the first two periods, like, they bring it for the third period. There's an element of desperation, and like, the games are close, which is, I guess, what we're not getting enough of. So maybe I'm just craving it from somewhere. But what have we learned from it so far? Apparently you need to be the worst team of the night to win the game. I mean, that is a big takeaway. It's a very odd one. We've had some, you know, like, slanted shot totals and extreme defensive shells and things like that. But I love that every second counts in these games.
Yeah, and, you know, as you said, close games and also a close series, right, which we haven't had a lot of in these playoffs so far, with a couple of exceptions here. And I do wonder how, like, you know, Rick Tocchet, I think, is probably going to win the Jack Adams. Andrew Burnett, wouldn't surprise me if he's a nominee or the runner up. And I wonder how much of just that, you know, the lack of space, the how difficult it has been for the star players to really go off in this series comes down to, you know, two really good coaches who have their teams playing really well defensively right now.
Yeah, that definitely is a big part of it. And, like, the Predators, I feel like, early in the season, if you look at the early results of a new coach coming in. I remember going through that, I don't know, a month and a half into the season, and you saw the Predators' defense really pick up, and they weren't bad defensively this year, but there was much more emphasis on protecting the middle of the ice, and you saw that, and then the offense started to come later in the year. And then for the Canucks, we saw that last stretch of play without Demko, them really pick up the pace at 5-on-5, right, and, like, pick up that defense. So it set both teams up for success coming into it. I think both teams are playing really well defensively. I think both coaches are handling the matchups really well, and I think the playoffs are a fun time to get into that nitty-gritty, because during the year we'll be like, oh, this player plays against top competition. Like, that's great. But in a series, especially as it evolves and gets past that 4-game mark and we're getting into 5 and 6, you really get a deeper look of it, of who's matching up against who and what are the results in those minutes, right? Like, how important is home ice? Are the coaches maximizing it? Are they making the most of it and finding these battles that they know they can win? So for Nashville, it's watching who Josi and McDonough play up against. And a lot of the time we saw the Jeremy Lauzon pair for Nashville take on top competition. But now, you know, we're really seeing McDonough raise the game in the playoffs, which we know him to be able to do. And then the reverse is true for the Canucks. Like, each coach is playing the series really smart, I think.
Shayna, the Canucks are not generating shots at all. They're generating attempts to some extent, but they're not generating shots, and it's been a wildly low event series. Dovetailing with that is Quinn Hughes' usage is down from what we'd expect it to be in the playoffs, especially given how he was used in the regular season. What do you make of this? Are these two things related?
You know, it could be. It wouldn't surprise, because when he's on the ice, you expect events to happen in the Canucks' favor, especially, right? Like, and we see it. I think that keep-in he had to save the game, and what was that, game 4, like, there you go, this is why you pay him the big bucks, this is why you play him. The usage is interesting. I've had a lot of usage questions throughout the playoffs this year. Sometimes it feels like players' minutes are getting managed more than I would expect them to, especially in key situations. And sometimes I think I wonder why things weren't tested more in the regular season to ensure a player can handle those minutes or should be in a certain situation. But it definitely is an interesting storyline, right? Like, and I get it, this is a series with the most travel and you have other factors to consider. And, you know, you have players like Zadorov who have their moments to shine that you want to get them out as much as possible too. But it is a little odd to me that he's not being just driven into the ground in round one to win the series sooner, right?
With how, like, low event this series has been, how do you look at the stakes of game 6 and 7? Because on the one hand, obviously the Canucks still have some margin for error, given that there's been very little to separate these teams, especially on 5-on-5. On the other hand, when there's little within the individual game, things are this narrow, it's pretty easy to lose 2 coin flips in a row, even if you have the higher probability. How do you sort of look at the challenge ahead for Vancouver this weekend?
I mean, you have to ensure you don't get complacent, right? Like, even if you have a 2-1 lead, like, you can't rely on that alone. And that's what makes it so interesting. I feel like, though, we're all going to expect one thing, and one of these games is just going to totally blow up, and we're going to see, like, shots coming from everywhere, and I'm waiting for that moment to be like, oh, you didn't see that coming from the series. But no, like, you have to be aware of how it's been, right? But you can't rely on every game to be that way. So you have to be aware that any mistake can bite you, not capitalizing on chances. You know, we've seen it the last couple games, right? We saw it with that Colton Sissons empty net post. Mm. That little mistake could have been the series for them right there. Ryan McDonough missed a scoring chance right before Nashville ended up tying it up in game 5. And you think those little details are the details you're going to be thinking about all summer if you're Nashville. And Vancouver's going to have those moments, too, if they don't win tonight. So you have to just have, I guess, an element of calm to you. And it's tough for Vancouver because this team hasn't been in the playoffs in a minute. So it's a different boat for them, obviously, but it's a good learning experience, too, in the same way of, like, understanding how to manage the big moments and also be aware of the small moments and not getting overwhelmed by it and not overthinking it and just still trying to play to your strengths as much as possible.
Yeah, and it's interesting looking at the Canucks because they're up 3-2 in this series. But I think if you had asked a lot of people going into the playoffs, like what's the recipe for success in the playoffs for the Canucks, a lot of it would have come down to, you know, JT Miller, Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, Thatcher Demko really carrying the load for the team. Obviously, Demko plays one game, then he's out. You know, Quinn Hughes has seen his minutes reduced. Now, he has made some really good plays, but he also hasn't really impacted the series at a shift-to-shift basis like he's capable of. JT Miller's been good, but, you know, not necessarily dominant, at least on the score sheet. And then there's Elias Pettersson, who really hasn't had a positive impact whatsoever in this series. What stands out to you watching Elias Pettersson right now?
The hesitation to shoot is standing out a lot. And then when he does shoot, it doesn't have the things that we would expect to see from him. It's very odd. If you told me he was playing through something, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, like, literally, it's a playoff. Who among us is not playing through something? And I get that. And everybody has to deal with it in their own way. But, you know, this is not the level you would expect from him at this point. Something definitely looks off. And listen, they're lucky that someone like Besser has stepped up so much to ensure that you're getting that top six scoring. Because the difference between these two teams, you have strength down the middle. That's a big one. Scoring depth. That third line for the Canucks is a huge difference from what the Predators have to offer. And the star power. So you're getting secondary scoring, which is great and wonderful. You're seeing the strength down the middle, which is great, especially in the bottom nine. But that star power factor isn't where we would expect it to be. And I think that's why this series is closer. But I don't think it's everything in this series against the Predators because of the way they played, especially down the stretch. Like, to me, they were one of the best teams on both ends of the ice and are a team that's greater than the sum of their parts. So you have to remember that star power isn't everything. But obviously, it would help to have it because in those big moments, right, and in this series where the little things matter so much, stars can flip a game on its head in 2 seconds flat, even if you're not the better team the entire time. And that's that little extra push that I think would have ended this series in five or could end it in six versus it dragging out to seven.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you mentioned those moments that one fan base is going to be thinking about for, you know, for the rest of the summer, depending on how this series goes. And I think what fans here in Vancouver are waiting for is Elias Pettersson to have like a positive one of those moments, right? Where, as you said, he's capable of breaking the game open and turning it in the Canucks' favor, even if he hasn't been at his best all game necessarily. I did want to ask you about some of the other, you know, playoff series happening around the NHL. And I actually want to start with one that wrapped up yesterday. Edmonton taking care of the Kings in five. I don't think a lot of people are surprised by that result. So Edmonton now awaiting the winner of Nashville and Vancouver. But from LA's perspective, third loss, third time in a row, third season in a row, they've lost to Edmonton in the first round of the playoffs. This after going out and making the big trade for Pierre-Luc Dubois that did not work out at all. Where does LA go from here now?
It's a really good question. Like, you look at the last 3 years of those matchups, and I thought for the first two, the Kings had a legit shot at upsetting the Oilers. Like, to me, I'm like, this is the most disruptive series of the playoffs. This is going to be so fun. And don't get me wrong, some of the series were really good and really interesting. But then you come to this year, and I looked at the Kings, and I'm like, this is the best Kings team they've had in those 3 years. And yet, I think this is their worst shot yet. The biggest problem is kind of deciding where to go from here is they don't have a ton of cap space to work with, so you have to decide how you want to, like, allocate your money. And this past year, we knew it was everywhere but in net. You have to figure out how to handle that Pierre-Luc Dubois contract. You have to figure out your coaching situation. Because Jim Hiller takes over, and they got even trickier to play against defensively, and they really cleaned up their rush game, which we saw completely derail midseason, which is why they had the coaching change in the first place. Like, I know it's like, oh, the goaltending slipped, but the defensive workload got so bad that I think it just was too much for the goaltending to withstand. But the offense was down. And you need to think long and hard if this is what you want to lean into a little bit more. Do you want to be that team that can just slow everyone down and contain them? If you're going to do that, you better be perfect at it in today's speed and skill game because everyone's getting away from that. Or do you say, hey, we need to find a way to have a little bit more dimension and push back to teams so we're not just playing defense the entire time. We're forcing our opponents to play offense. There's definitely positives to take from this year. I think Kopitar still playing at this level is a huge takeaway. I think Kempe was really good for stretches. I think Byfield's breakout is huge. And guys like Trevor Moore were consistent, which is what you need. But Matt Rory's contract's up. You're going to have to think if you want to pay him. You have to figure out what you want to do in net. It's so tricky. I really don't know what direction is the right move here, because I would want to get rid of that purely Dubois contract. I wouldn't have wanted to sign it in the first place. But that's not an option. So, I mean, good luck to them. They don't have the hardest offseason out of anyone, but it doesn't look like an easy one.
Shayna, moving on to the team that defeated the LA Kings, Vancouver's presumptive second-round opponent in the event that they're able to take care of business against the Predators in either game 6 or 7. That power play, especially against a Kings PK that truly was the best in the league, and maybe by some distance, pretty terrifying stuff. What's going right for the Oilers in their playoff run so far?
Connor McDavid is still Connor McDavid, so it's fantastic. Doesn't matter who he's matched
up against. That's simple, huh?
I mean, listen, if you have, that's your starting point. And the fact that that's not their end point is what's so big. You have a healthy Leon Draisaitl who loves the postseason, right? I love watching him play. He brings so much energy, so much fun, and he's driving his own line. But you have other guys chipping in, and that's what's so big for them. You have guys like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. You have Zach Hyman, who's been excellent all season. He's such a good all-three-zone player. The defense looks better. I think Matthias Ekholm was one of the best additions they've made, because that top pair with him and Bouchard, it's the perfect balance you need. There are weak points, but it's just, this is the strongest Oilers team I think we've seen in a minute, that if you can contain opponents and just keep forcing them to play defense so Stuart Skinner doesn't have to be super, super busy, like, you have the potential to go on a deep run and maybe go further than they've gone in years past.
Just getting way too ahead of ourselves and for the sake of discussion, and at the risk of a jinx that will enrage our audience, what's your sense of how, hey, you know what? Sorry, let me ask this question in a way that does not jinx anything. What's your sense of how the Oilers would match up with both the Canucks and the Predators?
The Predators would be an interesting one, because he's going to have that ultimate star power versus not star power. And I don't want to be insulting Phil Forsberg and Roman Josi, but it's just a different level. From Edmonton, it's such a different game the two teams play, that high-octane Oilers team. But I think they'd be an intriguing matchup against the Predators, because Nashville, from their winning streak forward, right, from February 15th, the day we all go back to a million times on, the way they were playing stout defense and were one of the best 5-on-5 teams at generating scoring chances, to me, gives them a chance to kind of test the Kings a little bit more than the Oilers did. And the Oilers at times were the better 5-on-5 team, right? So you have a team that can really kind of push you and not just try to contain you. That makes for a fun matchup in my book. Plus, you have the elite goaltending versus a team that wants their shooting to kind of outweigh the average goaltending. Like, they're totally different. The Canucks, on the other hand, I think you would just have bangers left, right, and sideways, like high-scoring games, kind of like giving the vibe of that game one of Colorado-Winnipeg is how I would envision the series going, especially if Demko is not good to play. But it would be such a test of the Canucks' defense, and I think they'd need their power play going. I know it's been better in the playoffs, but like to end the regular season, they needed more from their power play. So if they can get that, I mean, it would definitely be a high-event series.
Shayna, just before we let you go here, one game on the schedule tonight. It's the Leafs and the Bruins. Bruins on the road trying to close out this series. And this is fascinating, because at first it was, you know, the Leafs reliving nightmares of the past with the core disintegrating on national TV and you know, sniping each other on the bench and not showing up for the playoffs. And now a little bit of it has turned into, are the Bruins reliving last year's nightmare where they blew a 3-1 lead to the Florida Panthers in the first round? Who do you think exercises some demons at some point in this series?
I feel like the Bruins have to win tonight. They have to win tonight. They cannot let themselves get in the position that they did last year, right? Because I feel like we're going to see Swayman tonight, and then they'll switch goalies in a panic move, and it's too much. The narrative, the drama. I mean, give it to me, please. Personally, I'm like, I want this, but they should be looking at this like, no, we cannot let this happen again. But the Leafs, oh my God, what do you say about them that hasn't already been said? Everything is always so chaotic around them. And something that would be chaotic for another team is to the 10,000th degree when it happens in Toronto. So you have that part of it. The drama on the bench, the drama of Mitch Marner playing through a high ankle sprain and not looking as good. Who could imagine that, you know? Then there's the Nylander aspect, the Matthews. There's so much to it. I'm begging for the series to go seven for every single reason. But I feel like Boston has to end it tonight and just stop any bleeding from potentially starting, because I would actually be worried for them in game seven. But there's something about this Leafs team that I think we all saw when they were playing Tampa Bay 2 years ago and lost them in seven games, if I'm remembering right. And it was like they're generating these shots and chances, but you kept looking at Tampa and going, there's that will over skill factor. They know what it takes to get past here. I feel like the Bruins have to have an element of that tonight, even if Toronto is a better team than them, to avoid what happened last year. And there's definitely a way I think they can channel that, and that starts with someone like Brad Marchand, who I think, besides the last game, has been excellent in the series. He's been so good at, I mean, I know, like, keep saying, like, it's an art, he's an elite at it, and just being his usual Rat King self. If they can channel it the right way and get guys like Max Domi off their game and everything, and have that, like, will over skill, like, the series ends tonight. But I really don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And then, you know, the great thing is from a lot of Canucks fans perspectives is whoever loses, they get to enjoy the schadenfreude of one of those teams losing in some sort of heartbreaking fashion in this series. Shayna, thank you as always. Great stuff. We'll chat again soon.
Thanks for having me.
That is Shayna Goldman from The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast. And she had even like more glee at the psychological drama of that series than I think I do, Drancer. Shayna was fired up about a potential game seven between the Leafs and the Bruins.
Look, that series taking the stupidest possible path to a Leafs victory. I'm just saying.
Especially with Austin Matthews out, of all things. He's out again tonight.
You know how, so obviously my prediction for that series has always been based on what's the stupidest possible outcome, right?
Yeah.
And when the Leafs won with a Matthew Nyes goal in overtime in game six, I had this reaction that was like very much like Doctor Strange in the final battle of Endgame, where him and Tony Stark lock eyes and he's like, this was the one path. I'm like, one, this is the script. It's coming up now.
Oh my goodness. I don't know if I can deal with like the never say die Leafs. They clawed back from 3-1 and beat the big bad Bruins. I don't know if I can handle that. Oh boy. I don't want to live in that world where that's the conversation coming out of this round. All right. We got one final segment coming up here on the other side. We will hear from Rick Tocchet. I know Drance, you've given us a little bit of insight into what he had to say, but we'll hear the full commentary from Rick Tocchet.
I'll be curious, like, legitimately, there's the availability is going to start with about 45 seconds of us going back and forth joking about how to politely ask the goalie question. So I'm curious to see what audio we have of this.
I'm looking forward to that very, very much. Before we go to break, playoff coverage here on Sportsnet 650 brought to you by Threadco Print Shop. Take your brand to the next level. Check out Threadco Print Shop for screen printing and embroidery for a seamless experience from start to finish. Visit threadcoprint.com. One last segment coming up here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. One day before the Canucks and the Preds face off for Game 6 down in Nashville of their first round playoff series. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver. Online at DunbarLumber.com. Lots for Rick Tocchet to address after the team practice today. So let's hear from the Canucks head coach.
Rick, daily update on your goaltender.
I'm not allowed to say, remember? Where's the trick? You got to come up with a trick question, though.
Well, no, though, I just didn't want to ask last time after you wouldn't confirm your starter if you'd confirm your backup. That felt like a jerk question. But just where are you at in making that decision? Because I'm sure you'll make it if you haven't already at some point this evening.
Well, practice, same protocol. I talked to a few people. Obviously, Clarkie, I rely on Clarkie a lot. Ultimately, it's my decision. I'm not putting on Clarkie, but I do value his opinion a lot. He's excellent at what he does.
So you haven't made the decision yet. You'll figure it out tonight?
This afternoon.
And a lot of power play work today.
Yeah.
Seemed like you were pretty encouraging, even when things were sort of breaking down on the end zone work and then obviously the entry work. What do you want to see? What was your focus today?
Well, we had to do some entries. Obviously, the entries were, as Millsy said, awful. And it really just takes one or two broken plays or players to, you know, I'm not picking on anybody, to really put a wrench in anything. So I think for us is the execution. But after that, I really liked PDA. He was very decisive with the puck. He scored a couple. I know it's practice, but he scored a couple. He made a couple of good plays because he was decisive. So that's a good sign for us.
Rick, you told us after game four when we asked about Casey.
Yeah.
And sort of this idea of being precautionary with him. And you said something like, to paraphrase, you know, Casey's been with us all year, and if he's ready to go and we feel safe putting him in, he, you know, we would go back to Casey. Yeah. Has anything changed on that mindset? Is this strictly a decision about well-being and health, or is there a performance aspect to this where maybe you prefer Silovs?
Percentage, you know, health-wise, what's the percentage? Practice, you know, how many times he's practiced is a big thing. Are you tentative or not on a post-to-post save? Things like that come into play. Every player wants to play, you know, and that's a good thing. So that's really what it comes down to.
Do you feel that you owe him anything? I know that's a dangerous term.
I think,
but do you feel like out of loyalty, or because he's been part of the journey all season to this point, and he had a very good game before he came?
Yeah, like any player, I mean, you always, you know, Casey's one of the best guys you'll ever coach, unreal guy in the room. But, you know, I make my decisions on the crest. You know, it's a team thing. You know, whatever it takes. And Casey, when we need him, has been there for us. And no different than if he's in tomorrow or whatever. Game seven or the next round, who knows? I don't know yet. But at this point, you make decisions on, you know, the game tomorrow.
And I know that game two, where you had, whatever it was, 84 attempts and only 18 on net. And strategy kind of changed then, and we're seeing more shots to sticks, shots from angles, looking for tips and stuff. Do you feel like that mindset has gone too far with some players?
Yeah.
You'd like some direct shots on net?
Yeah, I do. I agree. You know, it's hard because, you know, you can't have a, you know, in football, you can have a guy in here, okay, ready, shoot it. Like, sometimes guys have to organically see it. You give players a concept, but then they got to act in the moment, right? You see a McDonough coming out. He's taking more of the weak side. I'm not sure you want to do a shot pass there. Now's the time to let it rip. You know, things like that. Or if they really sink, you know, that usually that F3 on the other side's open. Like, you know what I mean? I think that organically happens. But the concept is, if they're coming out blocking shots, you need to of hitting that second stick around the net. That's why when we play those teams, you always say, hit, you know, you got to, you know, make sure we box out, not just the front guy, but the whether it's the side of that or the F3 guy. So to long-winded answer, yeah, I think we've gone overboard on that. Yes.
Rick, from your standpoint, what have you seen from Elias Pettersson through the first five games, and how do you get more out of him? You've talked about needing to get guys to get more juice in their game. How do you get more juice out of Pettersson?
Well, it really, honestly, it's the best thing I heard today. He came up to me, you know, we did a video today. He said to me, "Talk, I got to move my feet." So I told him, I don't care what you say after that. Just do that. He knows how to play the game. He knows how to play defense. He knows our system. That was music in my ears. He said it. I didn't have to tell him.
Are there better positions that he can, his teammates can get him into, or his line mates get him into, to allow him to be more productive, to allow him to do all those things that make him special?
Sure, but I don't care. If you don't move your feet, I don't care if you're playing with Wayne Gretzky or Mario Lemieux. You got to move your feet.
Just to follow up on that, the Besser chance late in game five comes off of some pressure that Pettersson put on Lauzon. When you're talking about him moving his feet, is that, in your mind's eye, what you need and the sort of opportunity that can result?
Yeah, that's one of them. Moving your feet in the neutral zone, like demanding the puck, you know, round it, give me the puck. I call it water skiing, just kind of say, or even, you know, they're really good at, they send three at you. If they're on the wrong side, and we've caught them, we caught them on an overtime goal because they overplayed. We've caught them a couple of times. Hit the 6-6 on fives, I thought we caught them on. Obviously, we had the extra guy. But when you got them on your back and you got the right side of it, you should get out of that right side and take that ice. There's no reason to not move your feet, because if you don't move your feet, they got you. So that's the stuff I'm talking about.
In a series with this few shots, like this low event between both teams, it seems like every game has come down to whether it's a bounce or a finish that's either made or not converted, right?
Sure.
Is there a mental challenge that comes with understanding sort of the stakes of sort of every single moment from a player's perspective?
I love that, in the fact that every play does matter, especially now, because, you know, it's not like a lot of teams are getting, both teams aren't getting a ton of chances. So a box out, per se, if you miss a box out, which we missed, you know, on that goal, that's the difference in the game. So I think every play is really valued even more because we're not getting a lot of offense. But I still think we can get more shots and more offense if we do some of the stuff that we're talking about.
Andrew Brunette alluded to the sort of battling an illness. Obviously, Luke Shen missed game five with illness. You had Tyler Myers miss game two with illness. Have you guys been coping with whether it's a flu bug or something over the course of the series as well?
No, not too bad. Earlier on, near the end of the season, it kind of hit a couple of guys, but no. We've been lucky. A couple of the staff guys, but no. Thank God it's been out of the dressing room.
And just one last one from me. One thing that's sort of unique about the series is that aside from some blue line injuries and obviously your injuries in net, both you and Brunette have seemed to stick with a pretty set lineup throughout. There hasn't been sort of a big move and counter move at any point during the series. From your perspective anyway, what is it about sort of the flow of the series that you've liked that sort of caused you to stick with what you've been doing?
Well, I just feel that if we execute... And we have some matchups, so I think, you know, if we stick with it, we can, you know, we might be able to expose them. That's just my opinion. But that doesn't mean I can't shuffle the deck every once in a while in game. I think a guy like Hagelin, I think he's played better. I think he's come those last two games. Like, I think he's starting to realize, you know, playoff hockey inexperience. But I can feel he was better last game. So I just don't want to start being drastic and moving people around. We're not giving him much either. That's the one thing. You know, it's not like they're getting a ton of chances. So if we just take care of our end, maybe get a little more offensive in the sense of even being more creative. Like, once you move your feet, there's some plays there. Be creative, you know. Give and goes, maybe hit the back door, things like that. But I think when you don't move your feet, or you're so programmed, we can't give up, you know, can't give any chances away, then you don't move your feet. You just play the safe route. I'll just chip it instead of handling the puck. So, yeah, that's what I think.
You guys talked all season long about staying in the moment. You know, your earn your day mantra. Yeah. Does that become even more important now? I mean, I'm sure people were disappointed about game five, but if somebody had told you before the series, hey, you can clinch it in game six in Nashville, you'd have taken that in a second. So how important is that mindset to embrace it and try to compartmentalize and not think about why you're here for game six?
That's a huge mindset. You know, I think that's really what we're all about. I mean, we're one game from going the second round. You know, we've had a pretty damn good year, and we're not finished, and we got a chance to win tomorrow. So I don't think the mindset when you're on the plane, oh my God, we got to go 4-hour flight and all that stuff after the game. I thought guys were kind of pissed that we lost, but I think the next day you could see that guys coming on the plane were really excited. So that's what I have to see, not like, oh my God, you know, what happens if we lose, or, you know, what's going to happen here, what's going to happen there. What, you know, I think the guys have been pretty focused just on this game, their first period. I really do.
What did you think of JT's practice jersey at the start?
Yeah, I know. Well, that's good. Loose the guy. I think it was Artie's. I think that's Artie's. Is that his golf shirt or something? What is that?
Yeah, I think it was his dress shirt.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. Yeah.
Just JT being JT to ease the tension?
Yeah, I think it's important. Z's a big guy. Like, I love Zadorov and even Millsy. They chirp. Like, sometimes our room can be a little quiet, but you hear those guys. Garland's another comedian in there. I actually caught him. He was ripping me behind my back. I caught him going in there. So, and a good thing. So the guy's been busting his balls. But, no, I think that's a big thing because it's a high pressure. This is high pressure. And you have to stay loose. Even on the bench, you know, you got to make sure that you stay loose because, you know, last thing you need is a tight bench.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. Lots to get into there. I do like that little the little tidbit that Connor Garland's apparently trying to fight back against the teacher's pet rep by getting some shots in at Rick Tocchet when he's not in the dressing room.
Yeah, I like the idea too that it's probably like deeply unconvincing. It's like Rick smells, and everyone's like, "Shut up, man!
We know you love him. Get out of here." Oh man, that's fantastic. So a lot to get into there from Rick Tocchet, and I did like him challenging you to come up with a trick question on the goalie matter at the top. But you know, he played it as mentioned, as you kind of laid out earlier, right? Said he's going to talk about it with Ian Clark, make the decision, you know, kind of outline the factors that go into it, health for Casey DeSmith, how many times he's practiced, does he look tentative at all? So, you know, we'll see ultimately where that goes. What else really stood out to you from what Rick Tocchet had to say there?
The building up Pettersson on the power play thing.
Mm.
Especially, and maybe some stuff happened after I went down because I thought the room was about to open, but like his description, the power play, the encouragement of Tocchet both in his presser and on the ice did not seem to like match the crispness of the execution of PP1. Like, to me, that was clear. So, you know, I find that interesting in terms of what it reveals about the mindset, right? I think Tocchet's so no-nonsense, so matter-of-fact, that moments where he deviates into the sort of coach speak, the like build your guys up when they're low type commentary, I always find it sticks out and is at least interesting, if not as telling as we might like. It's tempting to read more into it than maybe Tocchet intends, but I always think it's interesting to flag because it seems to tell us something, irregardless of if it tells us as much as we might think.
By the way, and this text came in earlier, we can get back to Pettersson in a second, but right off the top of the show, pretty much, Jay Fid texted in, does Miller wearing Shelov's shirt mean that Shelov's gets the start tomorrow? Can we read anything in to the starting goaltending decision based on the shirt prank from JT Miller today, Drancer?
Well, you know, you do wonder, like, would Miller be grinding the gears of a young player if he knew that he was starting game six?
It's a fair question.
You know?
Although I think you could
legitimately wonder if it's a tell that it's DeSmith, because maybe you'd want to be a little more deferential, not sort of give a player something wardrobe wise to think about if they're preparing to start a pretty important game for your team the next day. So yeah, do I look at it and think, hey, maybe that's a tell that DeSmith's in and tomorrow? Yeah, I kind of do. I'm not gonna lie to you. I kind of do read that as like some just a sign that maybe enhances the probability that it's DeSmith as opposed to Seelovs. Also, if JT Miller sets a flash screen on a Canucks goal, I'm definitely going to refer to it as a Dan flashing screen.
Also, well, I will say though, like I think you're probably right. Is that would that be the time to kind of poke a little fun at Seelovs if he's getting the start tomorrow? But I do think, you know, this whole idea of do they lack confidence when Thatcher Demko is out, right? Like, if you're doing that to Archer Seelovs, if you're having that sort of fun with a guy who hasn't been around the group that much, right? Pretty young goalie who's come in. I think there's obviously a level of comfort and a level of trust and a level of confidence they have in him, even if he doesn't end up getting the start tomorrow. Like, I think it illustrates that, yeah, no, they feel totally comfortable having Archer Seelovs in net if he does get back in the crease during this series.
For sure. By the way, I guess I do have to come up with like a really good trick question for asking about the starter tomorrow, eh?
Yeah, you do. You do.
I guess I have to put some time into that one this evening.
The other thing that that stood out to me there, and you know, you were talking about gassing Pettersson up on the power play, but then also just talking about, you know, when they were watching video together and the first thing Pettersson said was, hey, coach, I just got to move my feet more. And Tockett saying, like, hey, man, that's all I need to hear. I honestly don't need to hear anything else from you. I don't worry about you knowing the system, knowing what to do out there. Just go out and move your feet. And it's been such a point of emphasis from Rick Tockett for Elias Pettersson specifically. I also thought it was really interesting to hear Rick Tockett kind of extend that to everyone, right? Like, how do you get more offense from this team? And it wasn't like, I think we only really heard it about Elias Pettersson mostly specifically, but he was kind of illustrating with the whole team, hey, when they're overplaying, move your feet, find that open area. And that can be one of the solutions to generating a lot more offense. It's not just Elias Pettersson in Tockett's view that needs to be a little bit more active, that needs to be a little bit more consistent with moving their feet.
Yep. And really spotlighting the idea of like creativity, taking a chance, going back door. That's sort of a new point of emphasis and in some ways doesn't really match what we've expected from this Canucks team.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, he also, I guess, said that he thinks the team is being too reliant on the slap pass, sort of directly repudiating my commentary from yesterday's show. But, you know, for me anyway, like the reliance on outside shooting, right? Whether you're shooting for deflections up top or sending slap passes from the flank, like, to me, it's just consistent with what this team has done successfully all year. This mm-hmm. has been their approach to generating quality chances. So, yeah, I mean, I think the overall tone of sort of their commentary or Tockett's commentary about how to generate more offense in some ways almost doesn't match the stylistic approach that this team has taken all season, which is a fascinating wrinkle, I suppose, especially on the eve of Vancouver's most important game of the season to this point. And granted, just about every game they play is going to be the most important game of the season to this point until they're done playing. As for, you know, the other part of it, and I'll ask this tomorrow because I was getting in so many questions. I wanted to confirm the team wasn't sick and on. But, you know, I do still think there's a direct link with Quinn Hughes plays less, Canucks generate less offensively. We talked all season about how different this team's ability to manufacture offense looks with Hughes on the ice versus when Hughes doesn't play as much. And look, Hughes is still leading this team in 5-on-5 ice time, but I mean, it's not by the sort of margin that we're used to, right? Like, he's like 6 or 7 minutes ahead of Nikita Zadorov in the entire series, 5-on-5. So, you know, I do sort of wonder if there's a link there between Hughes's prescribed deployment and Vancouver's struggles to generate the sort of shot volume that we've seen from them most of the year.
Well, and I think especially, you know, you hear Rick Tockett emphasize maybe a little bit more creativity, a willingness to try give and goes there, you know, find that backdoor pass. And you look at how the Canucks play, and, you know, especially with the version of Elias Pettersson they're getting, like, Quinn Hughes is kind of the guy who kind of unlock that extra bit of creativity, right? With his skating, his vision, his passing, all of that. And I think it's even more impactful when you have it coming from the blue line, right? So you have your three forwards out there who can be dangerous, and then you have Quinn Hughes kind of, you know, marauding into the zone a little bit. And it's one of those things. It's the way that the most consistent way the Canucks have to put pressure on opposing defenses. And we saw a little bit of that in game 5, I think. But yeah, it's just, if you're reducing his minutes, you're also taking away his ability to do that on a regular basis, and you're putting a lot more burden on your forwards up front to find a way to do that kind of without that support from the blue line. And yeah, the slap pass thing is interesting because I think it comes down to what I kind of read from Tockett was, okay, just because we told you can use slap passes to beat someone who's fronting you, it doesn't mean you can only do slap passes, right? You are allowed to use other things. And part of this comes down to just, you know, you have to read the moment. You can't be so stuck in, okay, we're going to shoot for deflections now, that you ignore how the play is unfolding in front of you. There still has to be that element of creativity within the overall structure to make reads and read the situation and select either, you know, the direct shot, the slap pass, the normal pass, whatever the case is, as the situation dictates.
For sure. For sure. The fact is that this team just needs to generate more. Like, you can't expect to score two and win tomorrow. Right? Like, as good as this team is defensively, they just need to figure it out.
Yeah. Figure it out offensively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you need to find a way. Like, and Saros now coming off his best game of the series, as shaky as it looked, right? Nashville on home ice, and while the Canucks won both those games in Nashville and should feel confident about the fact that, hey, you know, we've won in this building three or four times this season, I also think it's fair to say that even if it hasn't dictated the results, with the Canucks dropping two on home ice and Nashville dropping two on home ice, the fact is that home ice has seemed to matter a lot in this series for where the game is being played.
100%. Yeah.
Right. And on the one hand, that's an ace up Vancouver's sleeve for game seven. But on the other, you know, I do wonder if that shapes in any way what we see tomorrow at the Bridgestone Arena.
Yeah. And I wondered how much of that does come down to the matchup thing. I don't know that even though I think the home team's 1-4 in this series, the home team has pretty consistently had more of the run of play in this series as well. I'm very curious to see if that trend continues tomorrow in game six. If it does, I mean, the Canucks are going to need, you know, one of those game breaking moments. They're going to need the power play likely to step up again, or they're going to have to find a way to reverse that trend. And, you know, even with Andrew Brunette and the Nashville Predators having last change, find a way to carry more of the play at 5-on-5 and spend a lot more time in Nashville's end of the rink than they were for either of game three or game four, despite coming away with those two wins. Okay, that is the show for today. Drancer, great stuff getting us updated from practice and making time to be on the show.
Great stuff by you, buddy.
Okay,
you're settle
down.
An incredible glue guy performance from our guy Jimmy Dodd.
Jimmy Dodd is here.
Hey, and by the way, just because I'm tracking this ruefully, Dallas Stars now 8-1 to win the Stanley Cup. 25-1 6 days ago. I hope everyone tailed my tout. Good God.
There you go. All right. Sky Avenue Kitchen and Lounge, Discover Surrey's newest luxury dining experience. Experience the richness of Canadian cuisine prepared by a Michelin-recommended chef. Reserve your table today. We will be back at 11 tomorrow to preview Game 6 between the Canucks and the Predators in Nashville. Can the Canucks close out this series and advance to face the Edmonton Oilers? Have a great rest of the day. Keep it right here on Sportsnet 650.